This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says USDA's work the next several years under his tenure will largely be about more, better, and newer markets. Vilsack says the effort to build markets starts with trade.
You need to start with the USMCA and the implementation of that trade agreement. We know that it opens up some opportunities, particularly for our dairy farmers. It improves the circumstances for wheat farmers in Canada, and it continues our number one market in Mexico.
Vowing to work with new U.S. Trade Ambassador Catherine Tai to fully implement USMCA. Seeking a Phase 2 deal with the top U.S. beef market, Japan, will also be a key, as will China, whose Ag Minister Vilsack was about to meet with.
This will be my first opportunity to visit with him since I was nominated and confirmed. And I look forward to the conversation to reaffirm the importance of that trade relationship and the Phase 1 agreement.
Domestically, Vilsack says more regional and local markets and more competition are needed to boost food chain resiliency in the wake of COVID, as is a tightening of ethanol waivers for oil refiners, something he expects under new EPA Chief Michael Reagan. On reducing carbon and methane emissions with carbon banks and conservation programs, he might use CCC funding.
It's a way of basically providing financial assistance to farmers so that they incorporate into their operations climate smart agricultural practices, regenerative practices, which will not only provide farm income, but most importantly as well, it will preserve soil, it will provide healthier soil, and it will be an opportunity for us to improve the quality of water.
Though Vilsack says any new carbon capture efforts must meet farmers' needs and be fashioned with their input, which USDA is now seeking. Separately, Vilsack expects to lay out a plan in the next week or so to release CFAP dollars that the new administration froze, but expand the reach to ag and food sectors not served by earlier COVID relief bills.
I'm positive that we're going to provide a wide range of assistance and help, dealing not just with a healthcare crisis, but we're also dealing with an economic crisis for many, many people, and we want to try to provide the help and assistance to as many as we can.
And again, that was U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. Across the Corn Belt, they're seeing some warmer than normal temperatures for most of the month of March. A successful farming article says the big questions are, will soils be warm enough for on-time planting, and will there be enough soil moisture? Weather Trends 360 says mostly warmer trends through the end of March will likely help soils warm up well through the early spring. However, the occasional cold front shouldn't be ruled out just yet, with the biggest risk of short-term below-normal temperatures on the northern plains and the western Corn Belt. The bigger concern in this area is a shortage of rainfall that might continue. Weather Trends 360 says areas of below normal rainfall are expected in parts of the northern plains and the western Corn Belt. The one good thing about the drier weather is the reduced risk of flooding in most of the Midwest. Recent heavy rain has caused some flooding on the lower Missouri and Ohio River Valley, but the overall threat for widespread flooding is very low at this time. And as the ag industry celebrates National Ag Week this week and National Ag Day, which was yesterday, it offers a chance to reflect on the challenges and successes over the last year. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall says it's a chance to honor the hard work done during the pandemic.
Agriculture is the foundation of our country, and it's also the backbone of a healthy country and a prosperous nation. And all that's made possible by the hard work of the American farmer and rancher. Aztec Steel Farming was something that we created last spring after people was going to the grocery store, seeing empty shelves, wondering whether or not the American farmer was going to still work. And we started the hashtag to inform the American people that we were going to continue to farm.
Reflecting on last year, Duvall says the pandemic added to the daily stresses of U.S. agriculture.
A lot of our farmers lost their markets because a lot of their markets were in food services. And when those restaurants and food service areas shut down, everybody rushed the grocery store, and it changed the pattern of way Americans purchased their food. So our industry had to readjust, and that was very difficult for our farmers.
However, as farmers do best, they adapted.
You know, one year later, we've made great strides in returning to normal. Our commodity prices are beginning to go up. Meatpacking plants across America are almost back to full capacity, and our restaurants are returning to full service. And now we are hoping and praying that 2021 will be a better year.
Duvall says there are still challenges that farmers face, and AFBF is working to help farmers and ranchers over those hurdles.
This pandemic has shown us that broadband is no longer a luxury, it's a necessity. And then there's labor. Labor is the biggest limiting factor that American agriculture has. And then, of course, there's discussion around climate change and the policies that go along with that. And we've worked really hard with other organizations to make sure that we're at the table.
And you can visit FB.org to learn more. And in our featured ag story here on a Wednesday, Canadian Pacific Railway Limited has agreed to buy Kansas City Southern for $25 billion and create a 20,000-mile network that would link the U.S., Mexico, and Canada through a single rail line. If the deal is approved by the U.S. Surface and Transportation Board, the combined company would be headquartered in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, operating under the name Canadian Pacific Kansas City. The deal would create a rail network extending across Canada from Vancouver to New Brunswick and through the U.S. Midwestern network to the Gulf of Mexico ports and deep into Mexico to Mexico City. A joint company statement said that the two rail companies decided the timing of the deal was right in light of the new three-way USMCA trade deal that replaced the old NAFTA pact. Howard Green, a former journalist and railway analyst and author of the book Railroader, believes the deal has a good chance of being approved by the government regulators.
This deal has an air of inevitability to it. The choice of companies, CP is the smallest in Canada. KCS is the smallest of the five class ones in the United States and probably the most likely to meet with the approval of regulators. I think the other interesting point here is that it's a friendly deal or appears to be a friendly deal.
The transaction would be the biggest Canadian purchase of a U.S. asset since Enbridge finalized its deal for Spectra Energy in 2017. A North American-wide rail line network headquartered in Calgary would be good news for Alberta's hard-hit oil industry, but the joint company's statement highlighted the environmental impacts of the deal, saying the new single-line route will cut emissions as rail is four times more fuel efficient than trucking.
Climate change is front and center in this release. You know, one train is equivalent of 300 trucks. Trucks are bigger emitters. And the fact that this kind of arrangement, if it goes through, could be a big help to Western oil producers getting their product to market in the absence of new pipelines, a line right down to the Gulf of Mexico.
Canadian Pacific will file the merger application with the U.S. Surface and Transportation Board and begin the process of creating a trust that will hold Kansas City Southern's shares while approval is pending. Canadian Pacific now joins its other competitive railway in Canada, the Canadian National Railway, who bought the Illinois Central Railroad back in the early 2000s. And speaking of Illinois, let's move on into State of Illinois Ag News now on this Wednesday morning. How did farmland prices hold up in 2020? It was a stable year, according to Luke Worrell with the Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers and Rural Appraisers.
When you look at 2020 as a whole, at the very least, it was stable with even some slight increases in values amongst the majority of the farmland classes. Now, you know, when you're talking 2020, we obviously ended strong. And I think one of the takeaways from our event yesterday or last week, that is that the end of 2020 has really set the table for what should be an eventful 2021. You know, as you and I are talking this morning, I suspect a much sharper rise in land values when the book is closed on 2021. But yes, 2020 did show some stabling and even some slight strength in many places.
Excellent category land averaged $10,870 an acre in 2020 compared to $10,435 in 2019. Good category land was $8,446 compared to $8,335 in 2019, and recreation land averaged $3,689 an acre in 2020 compared to $3,904 the year before. In other state, and now a bit of local ag news for your Wednesday, the Illinois Soybean Association has named its IL Soy Advisor CCA Soy Envoy class for the 2021 growing season. Funded by the Illinois Soybean Checkoff, the CCA Soy Envoy Program is a partnership between the Illinois Soybean Association and Illinois Certified Crop Advisors. The CCA Soy Envoys commit to a one-year term to contribute actionable information, advice, and in-season updates via the IL Soy Advisor blog to support Illinois soybean farmers in their goals of increasing yield and profitability while minimizing environmental impact. This year's CCA Soy Envoys are Jason Bowler, who is a certified crop advisor and certified crop specialist, as well as a seed specialist with M&M Service Company in Carlinville. He specializes in advising growers in agronomic practices, fertility, chemical, and seed genetics to maximize yield potential and economic return on investment for each of his farmers' environment. Bowler holds a bachelor's degree in agricultural science with an emphasis in agronomy from Western Illinois University in Macomb. He and his wife raised two daughters near Litchfield, where he farms corn, beans, and forage with his father. Other CCAs from around the state are Jason Carr, who's from El Paso, north of Bloomington, Scott Eversgird, who farms with his two brothers, raising corn, beans, and wheat near Carlisle in Clinton County, Jared Gruel, who raises corn and beans with his uncle north of Effingham, Jason Hagel, who works for Winfield United in the eastern part of the U.S., and Randy Niver, a technical agronomist for DeKalb and Asgro, who serves east-central parts of the state. And moving on now into local ag news on your Wednesday, don't forget that the Macoupin County Ag Ed Foundation has their scholarships still available. You can pick one up from a high school guidance counselor or ag teacher in Macoupin County or from the Macoupin County Farm Bureau directly, and they are due by this Friday. And coming up this Saturday, the 27th, the Montgomery County Farm Bureau will be holding a household hazardous waste collection at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Butler from 8 until 3. Acceptable wastes include oil-based paint and paint thinner, aerosol paint and cleaning products, insecticides, herbicides, and pesticides, mercury, old gasoline, antifreeze, and used motor oils, fluorescent light bulbs, old and expired medicines, and household batteries. For a full listing of what they will and will not be accepting, you can find that on our website at WSMIRadio.com or the Farm Bureau's website, mcfb.org, or you can call the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro and talk to Katie. That's 532-6171. And that wraps up your Ag News here on a Wednesday morning, but remember you can always send Ag News to us by email. That's WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Wednesday morning, March 24th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.